Hello. This is your Midnight Marauder program. I'm on the front of your cover. I will be enhancing your cassettes and CDs with certain facts that you may find beneficial. The average bounce meter for your Midnight Marauder program will be in the area of 95 BPM. We hope that you will find our presentation precise, bass heavy, and just right. Thanks.
My name is Kevin Van Hentenrick of the Hunter Stone Carving Seminar, and you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Crisafulli Brothers Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Upstate New York's home services company since 1993. Red Carpet Service and Solutions. For more information, visit CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Sabisha Friedberg in Paris, France. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate. And establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service DOA Newscast, May the 1st, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. Judge Juan Merchan handed down his first punishment to Donald Trump for violating the judge's gag order in the New York hush money trial Tuesday. He fined Trump $9,000 for 9 violations. That from CNN. They report the judge also warned the former president in his written order that continued violations could also lead to imprisonment. Once the trial itself began Tuesday, jurors heard from the attorney who negotiated both the Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal hush money agreements. The witness, Keith Davidson, detailed his encounters with then-Trump fixer Michael Cohen in the final days of the 2016 campaign to get the money promised to Daniels. We head next to Connecticut, where a bill would expand the state's paid sick leave law.
The initial 2011 law requires 40 hours of paid sick leave for workers and employers with 50 businesses or more. The new bill covers all workers, regardless of their employer size. Janae Woods Weber with She Leads Justice says this legislation can benefit workers without access to paid sick leave.
These are people for whom taking a few hours off when their child has a cold or perhaps they need to take themselves to a doctor's appointment are the kinds of challenges that many of us don't worry about, those of us who do have access to paid sick days.
Small businesses were concerned about how this could impact them. To address those worries, the bill has a 3-year implementation cycle, giving them time to adapt. It also creates a task force studying the feasibility of providing tax credits to businesses with the smallest workforces. The bill passed the House and awaits further action in the Senate. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
An estimated 11% of workers are eligible for paid sick leave under the current criteria. And the Iowa Environmental Council has petitioned the Environmental Protection Agency to invoke emergency powers to protect sensitive soil and groundwater in northeast Iowa.
The council is holding a public webinar today and wants the EPA to address groundwater contamination in northeast Iowa's so-called driftless region. The groundwater there has a well-documented history of nitrate contamination. The council's Alicia Vasto says that's because the highly porous and soluble karst soil prevalent in the part of the state is susceptible to contamination from centralized animal feeding operations, or CAFOs.
So we did some analysis of private well data and public water systems and found that there was a lot of contamination of nitrate in those drinking water sources. And the state has really failed to take action meaningfully that would address those problems.
The state has said it is constantly working to upgrade groundwater quality standards and is in the process of taking public input on creating yet another set of rules. I'm Mark Moran.
This is Public News Service. Grassroots organizations are sounding the alarm about Tennessee's new law allowing teachers and other school employees to carry guns, our Danielle Smith reports.
Over 450 children have lost their lives to gun violence in the U.S. this year. Kathy Barnett with Moms Demand Action predicts the new law won't enhance school safety. She notes the community worked to get an extreme risk protection order passed after the Covenant School shooting. But Republicans passed legislation this year blocking local governments from passing their own versions of these protection orders.
Already, we have seen the largest counties say, no, they are not going to implement it. They trust their law enforcement. They trust that they have SROs already in their schools. They feel like its dangers are just too much.
Barnett adds even some of the smaller counties have said they will not implement it. Supporters of the new Tennessee law say it will make schools safer.
And access to reduced-price medications is a necessity for many rural Missourians with low income.
Republican State Senate Leader Cindy O'Loughlin says Big Pharma is trying to confuse legislators with unrelated hot-button topics such as abortion access and illegal immigration in a last-ditch effort to stop the state from joining a program that would force drug makers to sell medicines at a discount.
Appealing to nuclear topics, which really do not apply in this situation, is a disingenuous way to try to defeat a bill that is actually good for Missouri.
O'Loughlin says the program's transparent and uses the tax money saved to help low-income families deal with chronic conditions such as diabetes. The drug makers object to the government forcing them to give significant discounts, arguing that hospitals and for-profit pharmacies' bottom lines, particularly those owned by pharmacy benefits managers, are being exploited. Nationally, 46% of contract pharmacy agreements involve pharmacies linked to the three largest benefits managers. Farah Siddiqui reporting.
Finally, on this May Day, our Mike Mullen reports, Wisconsin groups are rallying in Green Bay to highlight a key issue facing the working class, the ability to retire.
The American Federation of Government Employees is co-leading demonstrations around the state, with attendees calling on Congress to fully fund a Social Security. These debates have been around for a while, but the Federation's president for Council 220, Jessica LaPointe, says the problems run deep right now, with chronic underfunding resulting in staffing woes at field offices.
Service delays are far and wide, and it could take, you know, more than 4 months to start your retirement benefits.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at Public News Service.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, May 1st. Local early morning temperatures range from 53 degrees in Tannersville to about 55 everywhere else. Nice and homogeneous. Regional average soil temperature is also 55 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be at about 65%, the upper edge of medium territory. Maple, juniper, and ash being the worst offenders. Today is going to be a little muggy, but otherwise comfortable. Partly cloudy skies and a high of 73 at 4 p.m. Overnight, the dew point, the actual amount of water in the air, will be steady at 50 degrees. However, the relative humidity comes up as the temperature goes down to about 52. So, tomorrow morning is going to feel kind of clammy. The afternoon, though, is going to feel pretty nice. High of 75 degrees, mostly sunny skies with moderate winds. 52 degrees overnight takes us into a slightly cooler Friday with a high of 68. Saturday, high of 63, and it looks like rain returns in the afternoon. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 3:04 a.m., high tide at 9:05 a.m., low tide again at 4:21 p.m., and high tide once again at 9:55 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 56 degrees and the tide strength is low. Sunset today will be at 7:40 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:46 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are up to 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 379 kilometers per second with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are low chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 85. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice, the world's only 12-hour strong man on the air, here on We Love Radio.
A 2023 reissue from a, I think, 1992 track from the Australian indie band The Cat's Me Owl with Between the Stations and the Silence on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. 2023 new music there from Japan's Food Man. That was Fuwari from a 2023 release.
Turn out for Wayfarms WGXE 90.7 FM's karaoke contest fundraiser at Half Moon in Hudson on Friday, May 10th. The evening will be hosted by karaoke Amanda of WGXC show Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, with proceeds from ticket sales benefiting WGXC. The contest's theme is communication, so all songs related to dialing, radio, phone, internet, fax, and more are eligible. Choose your tune and sing it for our guest judges Ariel and Gloria of WGXC show Las Brujas Bilingües, and DJ Patty Boom of WGXC show Vinyl Freedom to win prizes. Prizes include tickets to the Negative Land and Sue C., Matmos, and Rodney Allen Greenblatt show at the Greenville Drive-In and other goodies. Doors are open at 7 p.m. and karaoke contest begins at 8 p.m. If you can't turn out in person, tune in for a live broadcast of the event on the FM dial or online. For more information, visit the community calendar at wavefarm.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On Monday, students held a walkout and rally for Gaza on the campus of UAlbany, organized by Students for Justice for Palestine. Albany became the latest in a rapidly growing list of college campuses around the country that in the last few weeks have seen students sit in, rally, and start encampments in protest of the mass killings of Palestinians by the Israeli military. Here's an excerpt of a speech delivered on Collins Circle in the center of campus Monday. Barbara Smith is a local activist, scholar, feminist, and former member of Albany Common Council. She's a member of Albany Jewish Voice for Peace and Ukraine Solidarity Capital District. I spoke with her yesterday for some historical perspective on the explosion of student activism we have seen recently.
We are living in incredible times, both on the negative side, the tragic side, the diabolical side, but also on the side of vision, on the side of courage and inspiration, people organizing to make things different. One of the things that I have been thinking is, what's radical about wanting to stop humans from dying? What is radical about that? I don't think it's radical to try to keep people from dying. But yet, because of politics and political understandings and political differences, the students, by some, are being characterized as radical, as being stupid, as being naive about not understanding the issues, etc. I was a junior in college in the spring of 1968, although I graduated from Mount Holyoke and started at Mount Holyoke. So I basically designed a junior year abroad. And for me, abroad was New York City. I went to the New School College, which was a new program that they had started at that time. And what it actually was a program for student activists and organizers who were dissatisfied with the kind of education they were getting where they currently were. And I realized when we had our first meeting of the class, I said, my goodness, these are some of the most dissident students in the country. But when Columbia University then went out on strike in April of 1968, the New School College, which is downtown in the village, our professors canceled our classes because they just assumed that we would wish to be up at Columbia with other student organizers. So for those of us of my vintage, seeing what's happening now and having experienced what's happened then, there are a lot of echoes, there are a lot of connections. But just like when I was a student, we were trying to stop people from dying. In that context, it was a war in Vietnam. It was another group of brown people from the global south, the Vietnamese. But many echoes. Many echoes.
You've been working on this exact issue and organizing locally for a number of months now. I'm curious about why now we've seen this explosion of activism at this moment, or if you have thoughts about that.
What we're seeing is a burgeoning of a movement, a global movement. And there's more attention being paid to the occupation in Palestine imposed by the Israeli government. When I refer to Israel, I'm talking about the government. I'm not talking about the Israeli population, and I'm definitely not talking about people who are Jewish, because I have opposed anti-Semitism, and in writing, anybody can look it up, because I'm a co-author of a book that's titled Yours in Struggle, Three Feminist Perspectives on Anti-Semitism and Racism. It was written by an Ashkenazi Jewish woman, by a Southern Christian-raised white woman, and by me. It was published in 1984. There are more people now who are aware of the situation in Gaza and in the West Bank and with Palestinians. But you can't predict history going forward. You just can't. You can look back on it and say, that's why that happened. We're in it right now. So anything that we say could turn out not to be, it certainly will not be the full picture. We can use our best instincts and our best guesses. But this is an outpouring, a global outpouring of outrage at what is, I think, accurately defined as a genocide in our lifetime, ethnic cleansing in our lifetime. The occupation is verifiable. That's been going on since 1948. So we don't have to even argue about did that happen or did it not happen. One of the things that has been inspired me the most, one of the things that we did was to pass the first ceasefire resolution in New York State, the very first one that was passed on January the 4th by the Albany Common Council. And one of the most important, significant aspects of doing that work and that organizing is that we got to work with people in the Muslim, Arab American, and Palestinian community here in the capital region. Links have been made and connections have been made that did not exist beforehand. So we're doing the best we can.
That was quite an accomplishment. I think in some ways, those things laid the groundwork of what we're seeing now. Let's just go back for a moment to what you were talking about in 1968, the protests in Colombia and the Democratic Convention that year. And a lot of that was driven by people willing to make personal sacrifices, right? To stand right, up indeed. For these things. And maybe that's something that we're finally seeing now. I mean, these students being threatened with being suspended or expelled from their universities. Do you feel like you won those struggles back then against the Vietnam War?
We definitely stopped the war in Vietnam. We absolutely stopped that war. If not for the people's movement on the ground protesting the war in Vietnam, it never would have happened. I think there's a thing about being on the right side of history, or what I would call the ethical side of history. When people are being abused, annihilated, when they don't have full human rights, particularly when compared to other people nearby who control them, that's the time to speak up and to speak out. So that's what we're trying to do.
Barbara Smith has recently re-released a 25th anniversary edition of The Truth That Never Hurts, Writings on Race, Gender, and Freedom, and the 40th anniversary edition of Homegirls, a Black feminist anthology. Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
And now we get to our weekly weather update with retired National Weather Service meteorologist Hugh Johnson. Welcome back, Hugh.
Hey, how you doing, Bria?
Doing good, especially after what a beautiful day today. But I thought it was supposed to hit 80 or higher, and then the forecasters kept dialing it down. What happened?
Well, basically, Bria, we had a backdoor cold front come through. And most of the time, cold fronts come through from west to east or northwest to southeast. This one came from the north to northeast, going southwest. This is very typical in the spring, especially if there's any high pressure building off the cold Atlantic waters. It can easily drive and overcome any very warm air mass. People in Boston know this all too well. They oftentimes, if they're on the Charles River and they're boating, they can flip sideways with the strong northeast wind coming in, dropping the temperature 20, 30 degrees. Now, it wasn't quite like that, but when I went out this morning, I was kind of surprised. It was still in the mid-60s when I left for going to my volunteer at the hospital. And then I looked again about 10 minutes later, and the temperature already had dropped. So I threw a jacket on. It's a good thing because it was a little raw this morning. And then finally, we got some sun this afternoon. Temperatures did recover to the 60s. Down in my hometown, Philadelphia, hit at least 90 degrees, tying a record that was set 50 years ago, and in the low 90s in parts of Washington, D.C., and further south. So a lot of hot air that we missed out on, and some people will probably feel frustrated. But we ended up with a pretty decent day. I mean, really, it wasn't bad at all, you know, mid-60s.
Is it me, or is April ending up on the dry side?
No, it's not you at all, Lennox. It's funny, the second half of April, we've only had 36 hundredths of an inch of rain after having, we had the really wet March and we started out gangbusters in April. The pattern has changed. Now, we talked about this last week, the El Nino. Not only is it going away, but I'm already seeing signs of a La Nina replacing it. I don't think it's officially there yet, but it's getting close. And we're starting to see ridging in the southeast, I think, and that's part of La Nina. And another very interesting thing, and a guy I used to work with, I saw him a couple days ago, brought up, and I actually looked at it, and he's right. There, even though we talk about how warm the Atlantic's been, certainly in the eastern part towards Europe, extremely warm, it's cooling down in the eastern part off the United States seaboard and further east into much of central Atlantic. It's actually that part of the Atlantic is actually cooling off, which I had noticed before, but it seems to have really accelerated in the last few weeks. So the combination of those two things seems to have changed our weather pattern. I thought we have a wet spring in the May. Now I'm not so sure. The jet stream, La Nina active polar jet stream, or a Pacific jet stream, I should say, has actually finally weakened and is not falling apart. So we have seen a pattern change going on, and will be interesting to see how this evolves in as we work into May.
So, Hugh, with those changes, are we still in fire weather season? Does the drier April increase the risk?
A little bit, absolutely, Bria. We are still, we are officially in fire weather season until May 15th, and that's because the New York State and continues the outdoor fire ban through mid-May to May 15th. And that pretty much stays steady. That's a pretty steady, constant thing. But we are getting green up now, a partial green up. We're in that transient stage where leaves are starting to bud on the trees. The grass is pretty darn green. But the ground really has dried up. I mean, we still have great water supply. Don't even talk about drought. We're not even talking about that. But the surface of the ground has definitely dried out. So we are starting to see some changes. But fire weather is still a possibility. I mean, it's still, we're still in the fire weather season for the next couple of weeks. I don't see any real significant fire issues. I don't see much wind the next few days. And we will get some rain tomorrow. I don't think a whole lot, but we will get some showers tomorrow for sure. So I don't see any real threat. But we are technically, yes, we are in the fire weather season.
And Hugh, I know we've gone over this before, but could you just briefly remind us what the difference is between El Nino and La Nina?
Sure. El Nino is when we have the anomalous warm ribbon of water along the equator part of the Pacific, where you get that very warm band of water, and you also get a responsive, very strong, active jet stream creating shear in the Atlantic Ocean, which helps supposedly suppress the hurricane, but it didn't really do that much last year. But now the La Nina is when it's the opposite. It's the opposite end of what we call the ENSO, and now we cool the Pacific. And when we cool the Pacific, we usually build a ridge in the southeast. We weaken the southern jet, and we sometimes strengthen the polar jet. Being that it's summer, I don't think that's going to be a problem. But what could very well happen is we could get a big ridge developing in the southeast, and it could be a really hot summer, especially in the southeast. And we've already seen that today. As I said, we've already seen temperatures up to 90 degrees in the mid-Atlantic, not too far away. But weren't for that backdoor shallow cool air, we would have been a lot warmer.
So with those big ridges that you're saying, do we have any chances of potentially severe weather like they're having in Oklahoma and Iowa?
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. The La Nina actually increases the threat of severe weather in the plains. Now, for us, it's kind of a wash. I mean, it could happen with either El Nino or La Nina. We've seen it both ways. But, yeah, we're starting to get in that season where we have to keep an eye. The thunderstorms will start increasing climatologically anyways. And we might actually have a rumble of thunder tonight where there's disturbance passing through. And I don't think anything severe. And again, tomorrow afternoon, again, I don't think anything severe. But we will have to watch. But the one thing I want to stress about thunderstorms, when we consider them severe, it does not include lightning, which is it'd be nice if they did that. But I understand why they don't. It would make it very hard to verify and that kind of thing. But lightning is still probably the most dangerous aspect of most thunderstorms. So even if it's a generic thunderstorm, take it seriously. If you hear thunders, go indoors. It's absolutely, when the thunder roars, go indoors. But severe weather includes high winds of 60 miles an hour, hail of inch in diameter, and any thunderstorm that produces a tornado. Those are all considered severe thunderstorms. And even if they're not severe, they're strong. You can still get some damage with winds gusting to 40 to 50. You can still knock out some power lines and things like that. So, yeah, we're getting to that season. So something, especially with people being out golfing and everything, I don't see anything severe in the next few days, but we could actually see a few hear a few rumbles of thunder by this time tomorrow.
Anything else in your forecast for the rest of April heading into May?
Okay, we're going to have, tomorrow we have some showers. That front that's towards south, it's going to kind of meander for the next day or so, and a couple of disturbance moves along it. And then after that, we actually get a couple nice days coming up, but maybe an early morning shower Wednesday. And then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday look pretty dry and seasonable with temperatures well up in the 60s, possibly 70 in a few warmer spots with a good deal of sunshine. Weekend looks like, unfortunately, a little disturbance coming through with the front. Nothing big, but we probably will get some showers sometime on Saturday and maybe a lingering one on Sunday before we clear out again early next week. But it looks like we're not really seeing big rainstorms in the offing, and luckily no severe weather yet. And I don't actually see the next shower 80, by the way, it's a week from now. And that's a little late. We usually get an 80 degree by the end of April, beginning of May. So we're running a little late on that 80 degree. Sorry we didn't get it today, Bria, for you.
Thanks, Hugh, for joining us once again. And we look forward to speaking with you next week.
Absolutely. Have a great evening, everyone.
You too.
Thanks, Hugh.
All right, bye-bye.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Next, we are going to hear Two Hamlets, the track from the 2023 album Reflect and Oppose from Sky Furrows. That's Columbia County-based poet Karen Schomer and Albany-based musicians Eric Hardiman, Mike Griffin, and Phil Donnelly. Here is Two Hamlets from the 2023 album Reflect and Oppose from Sky Furrows.
Jammed on racks, plastic abject waste. As in fell down a well, won't be rescued or revived. Shear an idea, remove an outgrowth, shove aside. A shiv, a jagged piece, an uneven blade to do it. Open fissures and discourse, what I think has cracks in it. Trim it, give it a lather, a steam towel. Big smile, gosh, looks great, I'm glowing. Shave a few pounds, rave about a new show on Netflix. Project a disembodied speaker, brush dirt off my sweater. Dialogue, exposition, imperative persona. Wipe it out, erase it, deploy predictable patterns. Perfect Hamlets being and not being. Ride in the car to the fast.
fast food restaurant, in suburban headlight night with mom and dad. Who will see the golden arches first? Rage of gold, raga of gold, righteous gold, holding on to gold, giving gold, growing gold, long of gold, hold gold, cross into gold. From myself, I no longer had to choose. House beneath the pines, beneath thinking and watching Chopped and feeling sad about the breakup. I spoke a different language. I was Slovenian. I bent down to smell a flower. It was yellow and red and pink. It was any color it wanted. It split from itself and made a new flower, spreading sweetness in blue sugar air. Raga of air, spinning air, turning air into air, kettle water, spinning yarn, spinning rail, spinning tangled trail, knitting, thickening, tangled, never untangled, iridescent insect, thrumming air, spinning rage into gold, rampage, rose tone, rag, spinning song. Inside the measure, inside, outside philosophy, touching, two hands hold, two perfect hamlets, being and not being, ride in the car to the fast food restaurant, in suburban headlight night with mom and dad, who will see the golden arches first, two perfect hamlets, being and not being, ride in the car to fast food restaurant, two perfect hamlets, being and not being, two perfect hamlets, being and not being.
Skyfur is from 2023 album Reflect and Oppose. That was Two Hamlets. Thank you. That was the Chicago Underground Quartet with the song Unique Spiral from their 2020 album Good Days.
There was a time when I was in a hurry as you are. I was like you. There was a day when I just had to tell my
a 2023 work from Jeff Guberk. Guberk? Jeff Guberk.
his 2023 album Still Life with a Question Mark. He writes, "Came together as an album rather quickly after I discovered loops unused from an older project fit very well with the latest work I'd done in seclusion at Nam Sukluk Kazakia. This captures of VFL, or very low frequencies, radio, ionospheric geomagnetic crackling impulses, hydrophone recordings from the Solzak Pond, frame drums, a zither played with a Ebo, looped guitar and string passages, a synthesizer, shortwave radio, textures of leaves, wood, ash, and pitches calibrated as